Best Western made booking our family beach vacation a breeze, and it felt a little like... Time to go. Okay, kids, back in the room.
You gotta come on, guys. This has to be like...
Good night. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
HD Smartcast.
You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Dhamini, and you're listening to Gender Question. Here, we will look at an issue that's in the news using the lens of gender. The idea is to take a blind spot and throw some light on it. Joining us today is Ghazala Jameel. She's 43 and she's the author of two books, Muslim Women Speak, of Dreams and Shackles, and Accumulation by Segregation, Muslim Localities in Delhi. She is also an assistant professor at the Center for the Study of Law and Governance at JNU in New Delhi. And today, we'll be talking to her about Muslim women. Ghazala, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Damini.
Okay, so I'm going to play you a news clip. On January 22, the Uttar Pradesh Chief Minister Yogi Adityanath was addressing a Pro-Citizenship Amendment Act rally when he said this.
अब इन्होंने क्या किया है? अपने घर की महिलाओं को चौराहे चौराहे पर बिठाना प्रारंभ कर दिया है। बच्चों को बिठाना प्रारंभ कर दिया है। कितना बड़ा अपराध कि पुरुष घर में सो रहा है रजाई ओढ़ करके और महिलाओं को आगे करके चौराहे चौराहे पर बिठाया जा रहा है। जिन्हें मालूम ही नहीं कि सीएए क्या है वे लोग धरने पर बैठे हैं। आप पूछिए उनसे जाकर किसी से भी कि आखिर क्यों धरने पर बैठे हैं, तो कहते हैं घर के मर्द ने कहा कि भाई हम इतने अक्षम हो चुके हैं कि कुछ कर सके, इसलिए तुम ही जाकर के धरने में बैठ जाओ।
ओके, सो गजाला, द फर्स्ट क्वेश्चन आई वांट टू स्टार्ट विद इज व्हाट इनडीड इज गोइंग ऑन विद मुस्लिम वुमेन, राइट? These Muslim women-led protests that are happening all around the country and particularly in Delhi, multiple places, including, of course, Shaheen Bagh. Is it more than just the CAA, the NRC, which, of course, has been at the center of a political storm for well over a month now?
Well, the word that comes to mind and we keep listening all the time about these protests is unprecedented. So it is unprecedented that so many women and especially Muslim women have come out. It's also obvious from the clip that you played that it has really shocked certain quarters as well to see such numbers come out and protest. I think it would be safe to say that it is not just CAA, NRC, NPR protests that have caused this suddenly out of the blue, that there was a build-up to this, that there were various other issues that had piled upon and created a certain kind of discontent amongst the masses, including women and Muslim women within that, that have caused this. So, yes, I would say that it is not just this, but definitely this is probably the last straw that broke the camel's back.
All right, so you're saying that it's not just the CAA and the NRC, that you're saying that this has, you know, sort of a straw that broke the camel's back. I'm wondering whether, you know, you can tell us a little bit about the book that you, that you wrote, and it was based on research that you had led, where you had held workshops, besides, of course, having interviews with scores of young Muslim women. So what really are then Muslim women protesting about?
Well, the core issue, I would say, is one of representation. So Muslim women in these protests are out in the public sphere discussing various things, voicing their opinions on this law, how it is discriminatory, etc. But various other issues of targeting discrimination. In all of this, what is unprecedented is the fact that Muslim women feel that they have always been misrepresented by others, in whether it is in public sphere or it is in media or it is an academic writing, just a general sense is that whatever they hear about themselves
right.
doesn't really capture who they really are.
Right. So when you're talking about misrepresentation, what you're actually talking about is how they're being represented in the public, right?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like the media, in terms of what we tend to, the narrative that we tend to create about Muslim women, right?
Right. If you were to, for example, put yourself into shoes of a Muslim woman, you would realize that, you're already spoken for. And when you listen to some of the things that are said about you, it's completely astounding. You're like, you know, that doesn't really fit me. It doesn't really describe me. So I think what is happening is that Muslim women, through these protests, are also getting an opportunity to really say who they are and what are the things that they care about, what are the things that are of importance to them.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. In fact, this is something that we're seeing happening even now. There is a narrative being built about Muslim women, not having the political agency to decide to protest. There is a narrative being built about them being told to go and, occupy these public spaces and have these sit-ins, right? And in fact, what this also, the flip side, of course, of this coin is that, they're actually really vulnerable. They need to be protected. They really don't know what they want. They can be easily led. Mm-hmm. You know, there are so many corollaries that one can draw from this kind of a narrative. So what do you think about?
I think that if there are any myths or stereotypes about Muslim women that are being shattered through this movement, one of the foremost would be exactly that they are not agentic beings, that they don't, they can't decide for themselves what to do. One of the foremost, sort of icons in these protests has been the Shaheen Bagh protest, where, for example, for anybody who's really clued into the debate, we know that almost every day the discussion happens there amongst the protesters, whether they should continue the next day, whether the form of the protest should change. And it is the women themselves who, interestingly, are adamant that a representative from the government should come and meet them. And that is when they will, raise the blockade. So I think they've shown pretty clearly that they have agency and that they are the ones who are in charge. Right. Although there aren't many faces that could be recognized as leaders. So it's a collective that's really taking charge of the events as they unfold right in front of us.
Right. But, even while there is a collective, I think that one of the other narratives that we all tend to believe and a kind of a trap that we tend to fall into, and this is probably true for any community, it is that we tend to see the community as a homogenous whole. Right. And so we tend to see Muslim women as a homogenous whole, whereas they're really not, are they?
Yeah. So the stereotype about Muslim women would be that all of them are victims of Islam, victims of Muslim men themselves. And, even within feminist circles, the debate has been on for many, many, many years whether Muslim women need to be rescued, and many wars on international scenario have been justified because of this very reason, that it is the Muslim women who are being rescued. Right. In India also, we have seen the same discourse unfold. But I think
the triple talaq, for instance.
Yes. Muslim, that constantly hanging sword over a Muslim woman's head, that she can be, turned away any day from her marital home with utterance of three words. Although, as we know, that statistics available in public sphere suggest that incidence of divorce is actually lesser amongst Muslims than other communities in India. So I would think that these protests also show that there is a diversity amongst Muslim women. You will see women who are working class, extremely poor who are participating in these protests, but also middle class women or well-to-do women are protesting in the sit-ins, in the demonstrations, marching with students, marching on their own with, you know, LGBT community, marking Rohit Vemula's death anniversary and things like that. So it's all kinds of women who are participating. But it would be, I think, you know, there's also another discourse which is slightly sympathetic, which says, well, you know, they have now come out.
Right.
So it's almost as if Muslim women were cooped in somewhere.
And finally now they've been released.
And now they're doing something
they found their voice.
Utterly new that they've never even thought about.
And like that's not true.
It's the bolt out of the sky suddenly.
Right. Right.
Definitely that's not true. I think in drawing room conversations, everybody has been aware of various legal wrangles, the passing of various legislations that have been perceived by Muslims and other citizens as being discriminatory, as being oppressive. There have been various other incidents in the last 5 years, especially the incidents of lynchings have been very high. This sense of being discriminated against in a targeted manner, that experience of being a targeted minority also binds all kinds of Muslims together. But interestingly, it is that binding thread that also allows them to empathize with other identities that are discriminated against. For example, at Shaheen Bagh, when the Kashmiri Pandits visited on the day that they observe as Exodus Day, and Shaheen Bagh, women protesters were not really cognizant of that. They brought it to light, and it was organically possible for the women protesting at Shaheen Bagh to extend their solidarity to Kashmiri Pandits as a minority which was targeted and had to leave a space. There's that immediate sense of empathy that they could, you know, extend to them.
Right. And not just the Kashmiri Pandits, but as you clearly mentioned also, very rightly mentioned, students and
students.
Other kinds of marginalized identities, or at least identities and groups that are feeling targeted. But I want to also, you know, draw this to then the, I think, what is a very important point that you've made, which is that we have this stereotype, right, of the Muslim woman who is either vulnerable, you know, or doesn't know, you know, has agency or doesn't have agency. So what do you think really are the Muslim women doing in terms of the stereotypes that we have of them? Do you think that they're actually breaking these stereotypes, Ghazala?
Well, I think in one way, for them, it was always that the stereotypes are just that, they're stereotypes. And they always knew that there was a way to counter this. But I think this movement of people actually coming out of their houses, claim the streets, and protest collectively about shared values that are put forward by the Constitution of India, which also embody women's worry about the future of the republic or the future of the next generation, their children, which comes from the caregiving roles that women also perform amongst various other roles, that they are then also getting an opportunity to say, this is actually what we care about. So I think in that sense, it is really something that is new that's happening. So it's not that they've never really said this. But as I say in my book, that an act of speech is not completed unless somebody listens to you.
So we are finally listening. Wonderful. And on that note, thank you so much, Ghazala, for joining us. And I hope the listeners enjoy what you've heard. We'll be back soon with our next burning gender question of the week. If you have any questions, do reach out to me at @TheRateDhamini on Twitter. You can also leave your feedback at HT Smartcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Bye.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.
Best Western made booking our family beach vacation a breeze, and it felt a little like time to go. Okay, kids, back in the room.
You gotta come on, guys. This has to be like...
Good night. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.